Welcome to a special hour-long episode of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today I'm joined by an independent filmmaker, born in Latvia and a longtime resident of Brooklyn, New York. She's a Guggenheim Fellow and a Fellow in Film for the New York Foundation for the Arts. Her animated features include Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. Signe Baumann, it's a pleasure to have you on Words and Pictures.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I'm so thrilled and excited that I'm coming to Portland.
And we're looking forward to having you. So, Signe, we just mentioned that you are an independent animation director. And apart from being independent, you've managed to produce 17 short films, 17 award-winning short films, and 2 feature films. So what's the secret to pulling off such a feat?
Oh, you know, it's just there's like no magic pill that you can take and achieve that. I wish I could deliver good news to you. The magic secret, I guess, is that you get up in the morning and roll out of the bed into the world and start working on it, you know? And sometimes you don't feel like it. Sometimes you feel like, going out and doing nothing or just like lying in bed or something, you know, whatever happens. And you just have to get up and do it. But yeah, living in New York, which is a very unforgiving environment, and, you know, you have to pay this horrendous, huge rent. I think the other secret ingredient, I would say, would be you have to like people, you know. I think that in New York, if you don't like people, it's impossible to live here. But if you like people, you can build a community around you and your projects, and or you become part of community. And so it is symbiotic kind of relationship. You give to community, community gives to you, and it makes it easier.
Well, you've got a community on both coasts. I'm going to ask about your feature film, My Love Affair with Marriage. It's made the rounds of film festivals. It's won a couple of dozen awards, including the Grand Prix at the Anima Fest Zagreb. But you have top voice talent for this film, including Stephen Lang and Matthew Modine. And there's musical numbers in the film, and they're performed by Portland's own Storm Large.
Oh my goodness, Storm Large is just like amazing. I don't even know, I'm speechless. She is astounding. I cannot even find the words to describe her. She is truly, truly amazing. Yeah, she sang the end credit song for the film. And I always tell the audience before the screening, I say, please, you know, everybody, when the film kind of ends and then the credits start to roll and people remember suddenly that their dog hasn't been out for like 3 hours and they're like, oh my God, I have to go back to the dog. And I always say, please stay for the end credits song, because the song was specially written for the film. I wrote the lyrics and our composer, Christian Sansini, wrote the music and Storm Large sang it. And it's just an amazing, amazing song. And also the song, I feel, answers the question what you as an audience have to feel or think, or if you had any questions, like for example, what is going to happen to Zelma, right? This song answers it. And so like my desire is for the audience members to stay to the end credits and then walk out of the movie theater humming this lion song. You know, this song is called Lion. You know, do you want to know how it came about that Storm sang the song?
Well, sure. Let's find out about this collaboration that resulted in this musical...
Miracle.
Right.
Yes. So what happened was that during the production, the film took 7 years to make. And imagine it's a long time. And we always knew that at the end... Like we had 23 songs, but we always knew that there is going to be song number 24. It has to be entirely different style. It has to be a pop song. But I never wrote it, right? I always like put it aside, right? And so then we suddenly find ourselves working in Luxembourg on the sound. The best European sound studio, Philophone, is doing the sound, surround sound. It's just like an amazing sound studio. And they say, well, we have this very rigid schedule. And by November 1st, we need to have the song. And it is like July, right? And I'm like, okay, I start working on the song and I start writing the song, the lyrics, you know? And I send it off to Christian Sensini, our composer, and he emails me and says, this is crap. I cannot write anything to this, you know? Because, you know, everything else I wrote before all the lyrics, they were like three words, right? And he wrote it in a kind of like a jazzy folk style, which is very permissive. You know, you're just kind of free. You don't have to have a rigid beat, right? But this one is a pop song, you know? So it has to be very unforgiving, like very rigid structure. And so he said to me, go back to your drawing board. And actually, why don't you look up on the internet how to write a pop song? And so I went back, I looked it up, how to write a pop song. And then I was squeezing my brain and it just wasn't being squeezed really well. The whole like August. And you know, like if something is very hard, you keep putting it aside and you say, oh, I have these other urgent things to do. And then this deadline is coming, November 1st is coming. And now I'm like, it's already like end of September and we really need not only the song, but also the singer. And singer wouldn't touch any song that is not written, right? And so finally I squeezed out the lyrics and then and then my partner Sturgis Warner, who is also producer on the film, he helped me to measure the beats. And so we send it off to Christian, and Christian in 6 hours sent us the song. Now we have to find a singer. And so the singers are very complicated things because they have schedules also, and then they also have agents, and then they also don't have emails. And so we tried to reach out to this person, that person, and we just couldn't. And then I remember that Bill Plimpton, my good friend, has connection to Pink Martini. And I do love China Forbes. Like I found her voice just so amazing. I mean, honestly, it's like, I said China Forbes and it's like, it rings in my head. I already hear it. And so I asked Bill if he can connect me with Pink Martini. So China couldn't do it, but Pink Martini said Storm Large. And I was like, oh, you know, because I have seen before America Got Talent, the clip. And I just like, it's just like, I don't know. It's like, I couldn't even believe how lucky we were. And you know, Storm looked at the song. And she said, yeah, I don't see why not. And so, of course, I couldn't fly to Portland. And so we had to work through Zoom. But Storm really doesn't need no directions. You know, she's like, she comes in and she just puts the notes and then she gives you what you want. And then she gives you extra. It's like, you know, if you ask her, you know, for something, she would give you more. And it's just amazing to work with her. And at the end, the greatest compliment that I have ever received in my life, and I cherish this compliment like a diamond in my heart. When she was like, she already packed her notes and she's like ready, getting put the coat on. And she said, that was an interesting song. And so that's that.
Oh, she has so much power behind her voice.
Yeah, she has like power, but also she's very intelligent, a very smart performer also, but also intelligent as a person, you know, like emotional intelligence and also daring. Like, you know, she doesn't just perform. She goes a little bit over that line where something new starts, you know, like I feel like as an artist, you have to be near the zone of danger, like near the live wire. And she is that artist. She is, you know, constantly like reaching for that live wire, you know.
I think that audiences that see that there's a film called My Love Affair with Marriage and it's a musical, they might go in expecting, oh, maybe this will be like a Disney princess's story. But this is very different. This is set against the backdrop of historic events in Eastern Europe, and it's a 23-year odyssey.
Yeah, it's very epic. You know, like funny about talking about Disney, I don't know what audiences, I feel like mainstream audiences always expect the films to be about children, like animated feature films are for children, you know. But I think that our audience is a little bit more sophisticated than that. They already are familiar what art form is animation, you know. But you know how I sometimes pitch my love affair with marriage? I say, my love affair with marriage is Eastern European answer to Barbie. So that is my pitch. But I actually have two pitches. Can I pitch you my two pitches?
Oh, please. Let's hear the elevator pitch here.
Okay. Yeah. Elevator pitch. This is my pitch that how we did the fundraising and we raised a lot of money for the film. So my elevator pitch goes like this. I made a lot of short films about sex and I made one feature film about depression before, you know. Depression is an interesting subject, but it was a funny film about depression. In my new film, I combined the two, sex and depression. So I made a film about marriage. So that's my pitch number one. We raised a lot of money with this pitch. And the other pitch is, my love affair with marriage is the only film of a very unique film genre called biological thriller. If you want to find out what killed your previous relationships? This is the film for you to watch. So that's my two pitches.
I like biological thriller because there's a lot of themes of biology in both of your feature films, in Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. You're not afraid to get down with sexual themes, scatological themes, all of that earthy stuff that so-called polite audiences might shy away from.
I'm interested to show life the way it is, you know, and I feel that we are all one, although, you know, each moment seems separate, you know, but we are all one and we are all human. And so if you are pretending that you never go to toilet, right, like that you're better than that you're hoity-toity and you have like angel wings or whatever, and you're still a human, you still go to toilet, you still wipe your ass, right? And understanding that, I think it helps, it humbles you, and also it connects you with other people. Like, I don't believe in people who raise themselves above other people, you know. It's like we all are human, you know. That's kind of my take on it. Yeah, but I'm also interested in like what is behind the scenes. Like right now we are talking and it's nice and everything, and I present certain face to you, you know, but there's like this whole process in the brain that is happening as I talk to you. And there's a whole process of brain happening on your brain while you're listening. And then you say something, there's something else happening. And it's just so interesting. What is behind the scene? Like why we do things we do. Like why I say things I say, you know, I just really want to know why.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today we're talking with independent animator Signe Bauman, director of the feature films Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. Signe is a Guggenheim Fellow and a Fellow in Film for the New York Foundation for the Arts. Now let's play a clip from My Love Affair with Marriage.
You are on your way to becoming a woman. There are simple rules for a woman to succeed in life. Beware of everything, especially men.
I did not exist before I met you. My soul was empty.
The moment Zelma fell in love with Sergei, her neurons started to release three neurotransmitters: norepinephrine, serotonin, and dopamine.
Your ass is sagging there, right under the cheeks. Without me, you wouldn't know your flaws.
If you plucked your eyebrows and wore short skirts, you'd be able to get a rich guy who would take care of you. I'm a girl and have a girl repertoire. I'll be the best girl I can be.
Let's go. What a great day to get married.
That was a clip from the animated feature film My Love Affair with Marriage, directed by our guest today. Before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the midst of our Fresh Off the Vine membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our programming and that you'll take a moment to pledge your support. There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with our guest, Signe Baumann. And this brings me to talk about your first animated film. You are best known for your first animated feature, Rocks in My Pockets. And this is a film that covers a 100-year history of depression and suicidal thoughts among women in your family, including yourself. And it's clear in this film that all of these women are brilliant intellects, and yet they're battling depression their entire lives. Unfortunately, I think the two things often go together.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't really know, because I think it sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm just saying that that happened in my family, in my particular family, in my particular story, is that the talented, brilliant women suffered from depression. And I think partly is also because we were just talking about brains, right? The brilliant brain maybe is more fragile. If the circumstances are right, it can continue to be brilliant. But if circumstances are wrong, a little thing can throw off. You know how all these like very like new technologies, you know, the electronic systems, you know, just one little thing can throw them off and suddenly they don't work. And if you look at that as a human brain, you say, well, you know, the hammer does one thing, or, you know, okay, with a hammer, you can do five things, right? But there's like a thing like a laptop, you can do a lot of things, but then it can go wrong because it's so many connections. And if one connection goes wrong, it unravels this whole like patterns of connections. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting topic. I think that both of my films examine this kind of a question, how much are we our own biology and how much we are a product of society, like nature versus nurture. Like if, like, let's say my grandmother Anna, if she lived in America today, would she suffer from this? You know, would she try to drown herself in a river? And that is a question I don't know, because that is life that was not lived. She lived in a very difficult circumstances, going through war and much older husband and 8 children, and society put all the pressures on her that what she had to do. And she just broke.
Yes, your grandmother, Anna, who is a main character in Rocks in My Pockets, she is coming of age around the time of the Communist Revolution and the Soviet Union. And she has this marvelous education. And her only opportunity is to become a secretary to an entrepreneur. And like you said, a mother to 8 children. So all of this thwarted ambition is there. And it sounds so bleak, but the way that you portray it is just fall down funny.
Yeah, you know, because I'm from Eastern Europe, what I can do, I mean, you just laugh. My country has gone in the last 100 years in a huge transformations and breakdowns and renewals, you know, like, and everything is like upheaval. Every, you know, few years is another upheaval. I think that people, in order to survive depression or any upheaval that around you happens, you need to have 2 things. You need to understand, you need to know your purpose. You know, you need to have a feeling of sense of purpose of your life. You need to connect to community also through the purpose. And the other thing is sense of humor, because otherwise it's just like, I don't know, just cry and cry. You just laugh, you know?
And Latvia, where you were born and grew up, that was until the 1990s, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, they were affiliated with the Soviet Union. So on paper, at least, the Soviets were all about equality of the genders. And how did that work out for you growing up and ending up going to school in Moscow?
So, first of all, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania were not affiliated. They were forcefully occupied. It was an illegal occupation that happened in 1940. It was a great injustice. That is also what we observe now in Ukraine, which is like making me mad, right? But that is what it was. And so living in the Soviet Union, and yes, there was a pronounced equality between the genders. And then there's like a couple of very famous Soviet women, like Kollontai is one of the party activists, and then the other one, Tereshko, was one of the cosmonauts, you know, the astronauts that went in space, you know, was a woman. But in general, it was a very archaic society, the Soviet Union. It did say you're all equal, but you were only all equal. I don't even know when we were all equal. I don't really remember when we were all equal, because if you went into Politburo, you know, the top government, they were all men, and under them, the governors of the separate areas, regions, were all men. The party leaders from top down, they were all men. And there were like few exceptions as the women, but they were always put down as like, you know, career climbers and ugly women who don't have life, you know, like, you know, the same what we have here in America. And so as a woman, when you were growing up in Soviet Union, you know, like you were brought up as the second gender, like you have to be supportive of men. That's how you grow up. You have to give your ambitions for a higher cause, you know, and all that. So it wasn't really that different at all, actually, from what we have in America here. But it is interesting that there was this kind of divide, what was said and what was done, actually. Women had a lot on their shoulders. Like, they had to go to work, because that was the equality was, like, everybody had to work. If you had no work, you were like suspicious and they would throw in a jail. So women had to work. And then men after work would go out for a drink and go home, watch TV or do whatever. And women had to like run around and try to get some food, you know, and there is a scarce food. You couldn't like find food in one place. You had to stand in long lines and fight for the piece of cheese or bread, you know, so. And women had to do that. And then also they had to take care of children. So it was a lot for women to do.
Well, and even though you've been living in New York for three decades now, both of your feature films have been set back in Latvia, and they tackle exactly these themes of gender norms, of toxic relationships, of expectations, and this constant drive for liberation.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how you're totally right. Like, the you can take girl out of Latvia, right? But I would say for me, Latvia and my relationship or my growing up and coming of age is an interesting kind of topic to examine, because I also feel like I can see my country better from a distance. And everybody says, well, why didn't you stay in Latvia? You know, you could have made these films in Latvia. And then, like, first of all, I would never make such personal films in the country where I actually am from, you know, because, like, rocks in my pockets. When I was making film, I foolishly thought that my family would never see the film, because I was, like, in safety. I was in New York making film in English. They would never see the film. And then, of course, they saw the film. They were horrified. They almost, like, cut me off, you know? They said, we can't have this. You know, you're, like, releasing all the secrets. And by the way, we don't remember this way. It didn't happen this way. So, yeah. But, yeah, I do feel like living in New York gives me that freedom of talking about me, my country, my personal experiences, and in a more open way. If I lived in Latvia, it's a very small country, I would make films about my dream about going to America, maybe, you know? So anyway, every year around summer solstice, we have a family reunion in this like beautiful house in the middle of forest by the river, by the way. And I'm afraid to go. I mean, I don't know how they feel about me, because it's like you show up in a family reunion, they're like, oh, are we not going to tell you our secrets anymore?
I visited Prague back, 30 years ago when it was just freed up from the Soviet system. And there's so much to say about the Soviet system that is negative and repressive, but they funded the arts to such a huge degree. So behind the Iron Curtain, you had all of this funding available to the arts and all of these amazing animators who came out of these systems.
I mean, but do you understand what was the drawback of all that? It's like it was a censorship. Like if you were given support from government, they would censor you. And they would stop your production if they didn't like the message, if they didn't like the film, if they didn't like something, if they felt it was subversive. And yeah, people try to sneak in subversive messages, but sometimes the censors would catch up and eliminate. And they could give it to you, like the Soviet system could make you the greatest, the most famous artist ever. And then they take it away and send you to Siberia in one brushstroke. So yeah, like when you say, and that's another thing about sports and arts, right? It's like Soviet Union invested a lot in arts and a lot in sports, and they would show their films and animated films abroad, and they would send their sportsmen and women abroad to present the country, and everybody says, this is a great country. Look, the freedom of speech. The subversive film is in Cannes, right? And then the winning sports. And then these films would never be shown inside the Soviet Union. So you could be like really famous filmmaker outside the Soviet Union because your film was shown in Cannes, but your film would never be shown. And so it's like, don't idealize that system.
Not at all. But you did have amazing animation directors like Zlatko Gergic and Jan Svankmajer, who did have these subtle themes of resistance.
Yeah, Schwankmeyer, I mean, the Czech Republic was it was not as enveloped. It was a country under the influence, but it was not straight out occupied. I lived under occupation. I lived under a really heavy boot of the Soviet regime, where the Czech Republic had a milder version of it. So, yeah. But yeah, no, Schwankmeyer is one of the hugest influences in my work. That's very true.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today we're talking with independent animator Signe Baumann, director of the feature films Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. Signe is a Guggenheim Fellow and a Fellow in Film for the New York Foundation for the Arts. Before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to remind our listeners that KBOO is one of the very last media outlets that still brings you local and independent news, music, and public affairs. We've been doing this here in Portland for over half a century, and this program has been coming to you for 20 years now, inviting important cultural figures into the studio and venturing out to events that might fly beneath the radar of the big media monoliths. So yes, you can support this very special programming today by going online to kboo.fm/give, or simply text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with our guest, Signe Baumann. You know, you mentioned the Politburo and all the men in charge at the top of the Soviet system. And well, Hollywood studios have been turning out movies for over a century now, and most of the decision-making has been made by men. I'm wondering, because you make independent movies on the East Coast, is the film scene there in New York more inclusive?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably. I think people are trying, really, because, you know, after what happened in 2016, I think that people realize that you need to try harder, and I think people are trying. But at the same time, I also feel that people are not trying hard enough. And I also think it takes time, because like you can't cause injustice trying to heal injustice. So I don't really know. I don't really know. I'm not a politician, so I can't answer this. But from where I stand, I do see improvements. I see more women directors. I see more women films, live action films that are directed by women, that are high profile films and award winning films that are being distributed in the country, and women centric stories. That is really exciting to see. As for animated feature films, independent animated feature films, I think that there are more women directing animated feature films independently, but I think it's still more men than women. The reason is, I think, because it is much harder to do animated feature film without support. You know, like you are pretty much on your own. And I know actually a lot of men animators who are working on their feature films for years, like for, you know, 11, 15, 20 years, and they're working on their film after work on the weekends, and they just continue on. Whereas a woman, I feel she has children, she has a family to feed, the same, you know? So there's no time for this kind of after work, you know? So like I cut off my family and I just live here in New York, and I feel like it's a kind of a special situation for me.
So you do get back to Latvia fairly often.
Oh yeah, like my love affair is marriage was a co-production with a Latvian company, Lokomotiva Studio, and also with Luxembourg. But the majority of work was done, of course, a lot of work was done in Brooklyn, New York. In Europe, it's a little bit easier responding because there is a comprehensive foundation support for art and animation and for film. And here in United States, it's like a freaking dogfight. Everybody is like fighting for the tiny little bone. It seems really like unfair, but it is what it is, you know, and you work with the system you got.
Yes, it's very common in Europe for different countries to come together, their arts foundations, to co-produce an independent feature film.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. The two smallest countries of Europe, Luxembourg. Imagine how small is Luxembourg. And it's like not even like Brooklyn. It's not the size of Brooklyn. It's like size of half of Brooklyn. And Latvia, which is probably also size of a new metro area. It's not very big country. It's only 2 million people live in Latvia. And so the two smallest countries came together, pulled the funding together. And then me and my partner, Sturgis Werner, who is the producer of the film, they also pulled up the funds here in the United States through nonprofit.
Now, one thing that sets this movie apart, well, sets both of your feature films apart, is the European aesthetic sensibility. You have a lot of surrealism in the film, and you have these archetypes, a lot of animal archetypes, almost a fairy tale sense of these animals that morph into humans and vice versa and represent different things.
Yeah, I don't know if it's European or not. It's kind of my personal mythology. But Latvians are very big on metaphors. And also where I'm coming from, you know, talk about influences is the Eastern European poster art and also illustration work, which uses a lot of metaphors and all that. But, you know, like, for example, in Rocks in My Pockets, that spirit that lived in a river, it looked like a snake, right? That is the depression spirit. It's like trying to lure Anna into the water and say, come here to water, drown with me. And water is a symbol. It's a very ancient symbol of emotions. And so the emotions can be calm, they could be excited, they could be dangerous. They can connect people because people can travel through the water, but they also can drown you. They can perish you if you are not careful. And so that's a perfect symbol for emotions. And that's where the depression spirit lives. And the other spirit, which is like a wolf, lives in a forest and teaches Anna where are the mushrooms, how to eat when there is like nothing to eat during the war, teaches her what to eat in the forest so that she could survive these horrible circumstances. And that is her will to live. And that is, you know, the animals. But, you know, in my love affair with marriage, the cat. It represents Zelma's kind of inner independence, because and the self-agency, like the cat has agency. You know, you cannot pet cat if cat doesn't want to be pet, right? It's like, you know, it's just not going to, you're not going to have the cat on your lap unless the cat is going to want it. And so that is Zelma's kind of inner spirit animal, or like her inner feeling, like that her agency, like she's willing to sell it out. She's willing to give it away in order to be loved. She's willing to give it away. But in the end, she cannot give that away, because that is essence of her.
And then there are the rabbits, the hares.
Right. Yeah. The rabbits are the symbol of innocence. They, you know, like a symbol of like I wouldn't say victims, you know, but in some ways, yeah, like passive recipients of violence.
And there's a sense of place, too. You mentioned the rivers, there's the hills, the forests. There's a real sense of a lived-in space in the films.
Yeah, that is probably because of the three-dimensional backgrounds. You know, the backgrounds that we have created out of papier-mâché as a three-dimensional object. Every background was, especially for my love affair with marriage, was elaborately built from pieces of wood, and then artists would put layers of papier-mâché soaked in glue, and then paint one layer, five layers of paint on top. So if you want to know more about the process, you can direct our listeners to the website, myloveaffairwithmarriage.com. And there is a whole description of how the film was made, who is the cast. We have a spectacular cast, as you said, Matthew Modine, Cameron Monaghan, Dagmara Dominczyk, and more.
I'd like to find out more about your big move to New York City. When did you leave Latvia?
I left on September 22 in 1995. So it was the watershed for me, you know, like across the Rubicon. But it's funny for me coming to New York. If not for Bill Plimpton, I wouldn't be in America. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be, I don't know where I would be, because he, you know, he offered me an opportunity to work in his studio. And I was about to turn around and go back, because I failed. I spent 2 months, you know, trying to make it to New York, and I couldn't do it. And it's a very unforgiving place. If you have no money, you know, you're homeless. And I was like nearing the situation where I would be homeless. And Bill said, you know, you want to work for me? And I was like... And to this day, he doesn't know why he offered me the job. He looked at my work and he said, your work is so different from mine. But he was really desperately looking for people working on his film, I Married a Strange Person. And so there's this immigrant, you know, who is desperate looking for something. And yeah, it worked out.
I would think that you're... animation techniques are rather similar to Bill's. You work in hand-drawn animation, colored pencil. So I think nowadays, at least in American animation, that's a bit rare. And do you feel like your style might have been a bit influenced by working with Bill Plimpton?
No, not the style, because, you know, honestly, nobody can draw like Bill Plimpton. It's like you can't even be, you can be inspired by what he does, but you cannot really try to emulate his style or anything. It's just impossible. I have my own style. Back in Latvia, I made three short films. And so when I came to New York, it wasn't like I wasn't new. I didn't study art. I studied philosophy, and that informed me in a profound way. But working for Bill really was really crucial and influential for me, because not because of the style, or but the way how he approaches this whole filmmaking thing, you know, and how he is inspired every morning to get up and work on something, you know, and then accomplish something at the end of the day. And I think that that is very inspiring, but you could see how one person actually can make an impact Well, you know, in this corporate world, you know, like you think you need money, you need institution behind you, you need like organization behind you or corporation behind you. But he is just a one man show, you know, like he has a couple of people helping him, but that's it, you know. And I think that's inspiring. And for me, I didn't go into animation to work in corporation. I went into animation so I could be alone most of the day drawing. But the style, we do work similarly. I do drawings on paper, you know, paper on pencil. And the reason I do that is because pencil on paper, when you take a pencil in your hand and you put it on paper, like something happens in my brain goes on fire. And I start getting ideas, you know, like, let me pull out some drawings. I have like these drawings like this, you know, it's, I don't know. It's like, I think that you have to stay in a technique that inspires you. I have a lot of friends who like say, animation is too hard to do it by hand on paper. Let me move into like an easier way to do it. And then I stop making films because they stop having that inspiration. And so Bill continues on drawing pencil on paper because that inspires him. And I continue drawing on paper and pencil because it inspires me. But the thing is that our techniques right now is very, very different because I do three-dimensional sets. You know, like I can show you around a little bit. So here's the set of, you know, from the film. And so here's another set. So it's just like that's how the film was made, with three-dimensional sets, and I draw drawings on top. So that's a big difference.
I would venture, though, that one thing that you and Bill have in common is that you've made a life for yourself in New York, in New York City, in the big city, but you're still fascinated with your roots in the small rural areas, in the small towns that you came from.
Oh, I guess now that you said that, oh my goodness, I realized that. You're right. Like, if you like looked at my childhood, is very comparable with Bill Plimpton's childhood. Although, of course, I lived in a different regime and different circumstances, different country. But we still kind of similarly spent a lot of time being by ourselves, drawing, running around in a forest, swimming in the mud, you know, getting dirty, you know, and country skiing. That is actually true. And then coming to big city, and I, you know, it's funny, you know, knowing Bill so long, he never lost that like passion of like, oh, where's the fun, you know, like, and the fun is just around the corner. And so when sometimes we go to a party together and I say, oh, there's another party that I know. And he's like, let's go to this other party. And then we run, right, to make it. And then we arrive and he looks around and says, yeah, that's nice. But there is another party I know about. And then we just take out and we just run to this other party. And so that is, I think that is maybe as a country kids, you know, we both feel like, oh, the big city is so exciting. We can make an impact. We're like also opportunistic, you know, like both of us, like opportunists in a way, how we like, where's the opportunity? We need to grab it. Anyway.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today we're talking with independent animator Signe Bauman, director of the feature films Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. Before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the midst of our Fresh Off the Vine membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our programming and that you'll take a moment to pledge your support. There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with our guest, Signe Bauman. You mentioned the three-dimensional sets. The characters are hand-drawn. They're sort of in the two-dimensional space with the three-dimensional space behind them. It's a bit reminiscent of the old multi-plane animated features that were popular back in the 1930s and 1940s, but it's very different in a way. It's almost jarring to see these flat characters inhabiting this very deep space.
Yeah, I thought that they fit in really well because the backgrounds have a texture and the characters have a texture that matches the background texture. And for me, I see that they are two-dimensional and the backgrounds are three-dimensional, but at some point you forget. You know, one of the greatest compliments I received throughout, because the film went to 100 film festivals, and a lot of people have seen it, and so they would come to me and say, you know, I usually don't like animated films, but when I was watching your film, I entirely forgot it was animated. And I think it is because of this cinematic language. Because, you know, in when you do 2D, like everything is kind of 2D, and then you change the focus, and it's not really natural for 2D to do that. But when you have three-dimensional backgrounds and you switch the focus, it totally makes sense, you know? So, and when you use that cinematic language of moving camera and doing things as camera, that really helps to tell the story. And also it helps the audience to kind of feel that the characters are in real space, in real time and place. So that's how it happens.
Yes, the cinematic technique of changing focus from, say, a background element to a character in the foreground is known as rack focus, and it is very prevalent in both of your feature films.
Yeah, no, I really love it. I love rack focus. That's kind of like one reason to do the way I do it.
And the dark humor in both of your films, I do want to point out that none of the humor is forced. It's not about jokes. Everything is very character-based. And I think a lot of the laughter comes out of how familiar so many of the situations might feel to audiences.
Yeah, it's funny. This morning I had a Q&A through Zoom with Indonesia because they screened the film in Indonesia, in Jakarta. And so I asked them what was their reaction. And they said, oh, we were just laughing and laughing and laughing. And I said, why did you laugh? And they said, oh, it's just because we recognize our lives in the film. I'm like, in Jakarta. Yeah. But yeah, that is, I don't really write a comedy. I never aspire to make a comedy or a gag or write something funny. I just write the story, you know, and if you laugh, you know, I don't know why you laugh, but very often people laugh, you know, it pleases me, of course, right? But I'm not trying to make you laugh, if that makes sense.
So it's not just Eastern European sensibilities. This is a much more global kind of sensibility, talking about these issues of relationships, talking about depression, talking about the need for liberation and independence?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I was trying to do with the film, I was to like express it. How does it feel to be here and now and to be a woman? And when I wrote the script, I started writting it in September 2015. That was way before everything horrible happened, right? Like that in 2015, in September, we were thinking, oh, we may have a woman president next year. That's what you're thinking. And I thought my film will not be relevant next year. I was like, yeah, I'm just working on something that, you know, we will have a woman president. And then it kind of paints me that the film is relevant today. And I think it's also, you know, interesting how the society cannot still pull it all together, you know, and have a more inclusive and better way of coexistence. But what I wanted to say, my work is kind of interested in to report human existence from inside. Like I made these short films called Deadbeat of Sex, and I wanted to explain how do I feel about sex from inside, like for, as a woman, like what's my personal take on it, right? Because we all hear what men want and like, you know, but what about a woman? And what makes sense to a woman? And so I wanted to express that. So there's always something that I want to express, this deeply personal, you know, this thing inside, interior existence. Like we are barely able to share it with our friends even, you know, because once you start formulating it in words, it kind of goes away. It becomes something else. So in a film, you know, I'm just like trying to do this thing that probably I shouldn't be doing on film, but but that's how it happens. That's how I'm doing it.
And that's an element of your work, is almost an autobiographical sense, almost a confessional sensibility.
Yeah, but I mean, but in some ways I feel it transcends the personal, like my personal. You know, once I can communicate what does it mean to be alive, to be human, to be alive and to be here and now, you can understand it, you can relate to it, because you are also a human, you're alive and you're here and now, right? You know, a lot of people say, oh, your film is like about women or woman problems. A lot of people say, you know, oh, probably men. How do men react to it, right? But the film is not just a woman's story. Yes, it is a woman's story, but it is a story about a person who is different, who is not accepted the way she is. And so she desperately wants to be included. She desperately tries to fit in and she can't. Whatever she does, she can't. And then the question is, how do you find love if you are different? And I think that question is just, it's not just for women. It's for everyone. It's like we are all slightly different. We are all try to fit in, you know, and we all want to be loved. And so I think that's where my kind of personal story or my personal take on it transcends from my personality, from my gender, into every human being. What does it mean to be alive and to be a human, you know, and want to be loved and want love? I mean, we all want love.
Some very deep thoughts from a philosophy graduate.
No, it's very shallow. I mean, love is so shallow. I you know, like I say, and don't be scandalized, but I say romantic love is one of the most overhyped human emotions, because every song is about love and everybody tells you how to love and how it feels. And every, like when you're in love, you're like on drugs, right? And so in some ways, my film, My Love Affair with Marriage, is trying to like look behind, like trying to get into this objectivity of this very subjective feeling. It's like, what is love? You know, and romantic love, you know, because they say love is the answer to everything. And I'm like, well, define love in this case. Like, love is answer to everything. Love will cure everything. Love will save the world, right? I'm like, but what is love? What do you mean by love? I don't understand. So anyway, so my film, My Love Affair with Marriage, is trying to look into that. What is love?
A little bit of subversion, maybe.
Yeah, no, little objectivity, which is probably subversion in this totally hyper unrealistic world. You know, we are all trying to live in a fantasy in 2023. We all live in this digital reality and we ignore our bodies.
So, Signe, the feature film, My Love Affair with Marriage, is touring the United States right now. There's a screening coming up in Portland, Oregon, at Cinema 21, October 19th at 7 p.m., There's another screening in Salem at the Salem Cinema, and that's, I believe, October 20th, and Camas, Washington at the Liberty Theater, October 21st. So what's coming up for you? What should people know about what's coming up next for you?
Oh, I don't know what's coming next for me in the sense of, I mean, I'm working on a new project, but I want to tell you about, I'm so excited to be coming to Portland. I never have been to Portland and Oregon, and I'm so excited, partly because Bill Plimpton is from there, but because also it's just an exciting place because of animation, the community and everything, and Storm Large and everything. But you know, one thing that I would like to tell potential audiences, that I will be there for Q&A, all the screenings. I'm coming. I'm going to be there. I am going to greet you at the door and give you a postcard. And then I do introduction. And afterwards, after you watch the film, I come back and I quiz you. I ask three questions. And if you answer them correctly, you will get original drawing from the film. And I think what else could be more amazing than to get original drawing from a film? And then, of course, I will answer your questions. And if you want to ask me to sign the postcard, I will sign it to you. And I also draw a cat. So I really hope that Portland and Oregon people would get off their couches and get into the movie theaters, because movies are the best when we watch them together, we laugh together, we cry together, and then we get to sing together with Storm Large.
And will Storm be at any of the screenings?
Unfortunately, she has a tour, you know, like her schedule is so hectic, she's touring around. But we are still trying to catch the tail of her and see if she can make one of these events. But she hasn't gotten back to us yet.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And my guest today has been independent animator Signe Bauman, director of the feature films Rocks in My Pockets and My Love Affair with Marriage. Signe, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I can't wait to come to Portland and connect with Portland audiences.
All right. And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about your work, where would they look?
Please go to myloveaffairwithmarriage.com, and there is a screenings page, and you can find out where the film is screening. And I'll be there giving the drawings away and talking to you.
Well, we hope that everybody has been enjoying our special programming for KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture. Now, let's go out with some music from the film My Love Affair with Marriage. The lyrics are by Signe Bauman, the music by Christian Sensini, and the singing by Storm Large.